All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. We're going to be in Jonah. We'll be in chapter 1-ish when we get there. But like we do every Bible class, we'll go ahead and open it up for any questions or comments related to either the sermon or anything we've discussed already as far as Jonah is concerned. Any questions we can address? No. I'm just curious, how many of y'all have like actually read through the book of Daniel recently? Like within the last year or so? Okay. For whatever reason, everybody likes the stories in Daniel. They don't like the prophecy in Daniel. It messes with you. And there's a... Anyway, okay. Moving on. Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah, Sandy had something she wanted to share about the name Daniel. She's actually got it written out in Hebrew here, so I'll turn that over to her. Yeah. Yeah, we will. If you ever get an opportunity to study biblical languages, take it. There's all kinds of things that you'll see and all kinds of things that you'll hear. Our English translations are great, but there's always let me start by saying this: the Bible was always intended to be translated. The minute it was written, you started getting it in other languages. So it was meant to be translated, but there's something about reading it in the original languages or doing some study in that. So there's a lot of online resources that are free. There are some that are paid. So if you've got any interest in that, let me know, and I'll be happy to direct you towards some avenues of study on that. So we have been in We're in Jonah chapter 1, and Jonah is... I'm going to pigtail off of something that Sandy said there about time being cyclical in the Eastern mind, that things come around and things happen again and again and again. Did anybody notice while we were talking about the story of Daniel, did you see similarity in the life of Joseph? Joseph winds up in a land where his people are not in charge. Joseph interprets dreams. Daniel interprets dreams. As they are faithful to God and trust in God, they are exalted higher and higher in the kingdom. There's some similarities, there's some contrasts. And you're going to see that throughout Scripture. We've seen that in Jonah so far. We're looking at the book of Jonah, not just to study the story of Jonah, but to look at how the Bible works as a whole. Jonah is a microcosm of the entire Hebrew Bible, and also into the New Testament as well, the way that the cycles of things happen. And so what you will see, just like in Daniel, we have... stories that are mirrored together, we have mirrored stories throughout Scripture. Different people, different place, different time, but you start looking at the details of it and you go, wow, that's really similar to fill in the blank. And we've looked at that with Jonah. We looked at the similarity between the Moses story, the Ezekiel story, Elijah story, Jeremiah story, these calling of the prophets. We talked about how Moses was called to be a prophet of God. He didn't want to go. Five different times he tries to get out of it. Eventually God gets him to do it. The people sin. They worship the golden calf. Moses up on the mountain before God offers his life on behalf of the people of Israel. That's a story I was never taught growing up. I had to read it for myself. Where Moses says, don't blot them off. If you got to kill somebody, blot me out. And God says, that won't be necessary. Moses intercedes on the behalf of the people, offering his life, and God forgives the people. Then you get to Elijah, and Elijah's on the exact same mountain. Again, we've talked about how in Jonah, places are important. The name of the cities are important. What do they teach us about things? And so Elijah winds up on the exact same mountain as Moses. And it's a very similar story. You read the Moses story, you read the Elijah story, and you're going to see some very big similarities. There's this supernatural passing by of God in Moses' story, where Exodus 34, verses 5 and 6, where God reveals himself. Yahweh, Yahweh, full of compassion and mercy, gracious to 1,000 generations. He's forgiving. We know this about him. In front of Elijah, there's all this wind and there's all these cosmic events, but there is silence. God doesn't speak into that situation. But he asked Elijah two different questions. He asked one first, before that cosmic event, and he says, basically, what are you doing here? Why are you here? Now, Elijah's kind of licking his wounds because he feels sorry for himself. Life is hard. The king is causing problems. Common theme throughout the Bible. And so, life's difficult, and he kind of whines to God and gives this whiny little explanation. Oh, everybody's dying. Nobody left but me. Oh. So God does all this appearance thing, very much like the Moses story. And then there's silence. God doesn't reveal his name. God doesn't reveal his character to Elijah. Again, the second time, God asks the same question. What are you doing here? And Elijah, word for word, gives the exact same answer. Did the experience on the mountain change him? So the next thing that God says to Elijah is, go appoint your successor. It's time for me to work through Elisha, not you. You're unchanged. Your heart won't change. Now we get Jonah. Jonah is called. Does he try to get out of it? Yep. He takes off. Moses at one point tells God, you know, if this is the way these people are going to deal with me, just kill me. Just kill me. I'm done. Elijah on the mountain tells God, kill me now. I'm done with this. What does Jonah do? He tries to get other people to kill him. He's the most comical, upside down, backwards prophet. He wants other people to do the dirty work. They throw him over the ship, begging God to forgive them. And when they see the power of the storm being calmed, the prophet of God who wouldn't even pray on the boat, this experience converts the sailors. And they're taking vows in Yahweh's name and offering sacrifices by the end of the story. He does absolutely nothing to image God, to do his job as a prophet of God, and yet the whole boat repents. It's hilarious. And we talked a little bit about what's odd in this story and how God can work through even flawed, failed Barney Fifes of prophets. They can't even get out of their own way. We talked about Tarshish. We talked about how that's a place you kind of source your own little Eden when Solomon was at the height of his folly and was just building up riches and zoos and kind of creating his own little Eden-esque thing. He imported stuff from the ships of Tarshish, were bringing gold all the time, bringing all the wealth. And of course, that led him off on a horrendous path where he becomes the anti-king. You read in Deuteronomy, everything a king should do, and Solomon breaks them all. You got Nineveh, the great city. We looked at the history of that phrase, the great city. It's not a very common phrase in the Bible, but it starts at the beginning, and Nineveh is tied to Babylon at the beginning. It's founded by corrupt, evil people. What does that tell you about Nineveh? It's bad news. We also talked about how Jonah starts with the word and. That means there's something existent before this. Is Jonah anywhere else in the Bible? Yes, he is. He's in Kings. And in Kings, he delivers a message of God's mercy to a king who doesn't deserve it. And then the word of the Lord comes to Jonah, saying, go to Nineveh. What is Jonah thinking? Not again, Lord. Seriously? You're going to do it again? Really? He doesn't want any part in that. Jonah thinks he knows better. He is outraged. He finds it offensive that God's willing to forgive people. And in a minute, he's going to find himself in need of forgiveness. But Anyway, that's chapter 2. That's a little bit odd. Any questions or comments over chapter 1 so far? Before, there's one other thing I want us to look at chapter 1, and then we'll get to chapter 2 maybe this week, maybe next week. Yes, sir?
I'm just thinking about that. What are you doing? Where are you?
Yeah.
That goes clear back to the Garden of Eden.
Yeah. Where are you?
when Jesus, when he was, what, 12 years old, mm-hmm. the temple. And
there's that. I think Luke is intentionally doing something with that, yes. Yeah, Luke's the only one that carries that story of Jesus at the temple at age 12. He's supposed to be with his family traveling, and where is he? That same question is. Yeah, yeah. Very good observations. 1 Kings 14, if I'm remembering off the top of my head correctly. 2 Kings 14, sorry. I do that every time, and every time I think I've got it remembered now. Okay, I'll remember that. There you go. 2 Kings 14. Yeah. He goes and he's a prophet to one of the worst kings in Israel at that point. And God blesses him. We'll just read it real quick. 2 Kings 14, starting in verse 23. In the 15th year of Amaziah, son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, son of Jehoash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria, and he reigned 41 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord and did not turn away from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which had caused Israel to commit. He was the one who restored the boundaries of Israel from Lebo Hamath to the Dead Sea in accordance with the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, spoken through his servant Jonah, son of Amittai. This king didn't do anything to deserve that. Yet under the reign of this king, the grandness, the size, the expanse of the kingdom of Israel is greater during this time than pretty much any other time in Israel's history. Why? Well, it goes on to tell us that the Lord had seen how bitterly everyone in Israel, whether slave or free, was suffering, and there was no one to help them. And since the Lord had not said that he would blot out the name of Israel from under the heaven, he saved him. Didn't deserve it. Wasn't a good guy. But God saw the suffering of the people. He saw how bad the people were suffering. And he raised up the prophet Jonah to show mercy. What's going on in Nineveh? For their evil has risen up before me. We talked about that phrase as well. So Jonah knows what he's getting into. Jonah knows what God's going to do. We haven't read chapter 4 yet, but when you get to chapter 4, Jonah goes, I knew you were going to do this. This is why I didn't want to go. I knew you were going to forgive these people. This is who you say you are. You're the God who forgives. I don't want you to forgive, so I wasn't going to go. Plain and simple. Jonah's trying to control God, isn't he? Do we ever do the same thing? Yeah, absolutely we do. Any other questions or comments over chapter 1 before we look at the parallel in the Psalms to Jonah? Well, at least to Jonah chapter 1. Okay, I'll be honest with you, since my... Since March, my personal Bible reading time has suffered a bit. I was doing my normal reading, and then I was reading a chapter out of Proverbs every day. There's 31 chapters in Proverbs. You read one a day, pretty much get through it by the end of the month. There are 150 Psalms. You read 5 a day, you get through the book of Psalms in a month. And so I was doing that in addition to my normal reading. That has stopped for a while because life has been just a little bit busy and a little bit crazy. But when you read through the Psalms, you start thinking, you start hearing, you start seeing a whole lot of psalm imagery in pretty much every story you read in the Bible. And the question kind of echoes around, what came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first, the psalm or the story in the Bible? Was it somebody who saw this story and was recording this story that happened and going, you know, I could put some psalm language into this story when I'm writing it? Or did the event happen and somebody go, you know, I could write a song about that? Your guess is as good as mine in some of those regards. But it's clear that the author of Jonah knew the Psalms backwards and forwards. Chapter 2 is, if you look at it in your Bible, you're going to see chapter 2 is formatted in a way that looks just like the Psalms. It's poetic in nature. And we've talked a little bit about chapter 2. We're going to get to that later. But Jonah misapplies quotes from the Psalms all through chapter 2. You realize Jonah knows the Psalms, but he doesn't know the Psalms. He knows the word. What's the Elton John song, the dancer?
Tony Danza?
Yeah. Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza. That song? You know the songs, those popular songs that nobody really knows the lyrics to, but you get all those funny people try to sing it and they mess up the words and all that sort of. They were talking about pop at the funeral yesterday and how they would argue about song lyrics. He and his grandkids would argue about what's the real song lyrics to this thing, you know. That's kind of what Jonah is doing with the Psalms. He knows the Psalms, but he really doesn't understand what they're about, and he starts like really misapplying them to his context. In chapter 1, we get the story of Jonah very much mirroring Psalm 107. So turn it over. My battery's dying, I think. Turn it over to Psalm 107, and we're going to look there, and we're going to be looking at the parallels. You might want to put a hand in Jonah and a hand in Psalm. We're going to look back and forth between these two quite a bit. Psalm 107. The Psalm 107 starts the fifth book of the Psalms. If you didn't know that, the Psalms in your Bible is a compilation of five songbooks. And each one has a major theme. Again, this isn't a study of Psalms. We're not going to dive off too deeply into that. But book five starts with Psalm 107. And the next several Psalms are affirming that Yahweh hears prayer, and that he will forgive the people, and that he will send his Messiah. This is after Babylonian captivity. We're looking at the mess. We're looking at what's going on. We're looking at how we got into this mess, and will God take us back is a big question in the Chronicles and in this portion of the Psalms. And so Psalm 107 begins by reminding the people that God's love endures forever. And even though we mess up and even though we have problems, God will forgive. And then it goes into a... do you remember we talked about the poetic format of Jonah? There was a chiasm. There's a little bit of a chiasm here in Psalm 107. We get a story of God in the desert wasteland. We get a story of darkness. We get a story of fools and rebellious ways. And then we get a story about sailors. Can't get it out. Sailors. And every single one of these in Psalm 107 ends, or well, right in the middle of it, has the exact same phrase. Then they cried to Yahweh in their trouble, and he saved them from their distress. That happens over and over and over again. Four times in each one of these little sections of Psalm 107, that phrase comes back up. They called out in their distress, Yahweh saved them. Over and over again. Okay, so we're just going to focus on the last part of that section. This is Psalm 107, starting in verse 23. And we've talked a little bit about translations and how sometimes they will rephrase things to try to make them clear in English. I'm going to interject a little bit of Hebrew here. Verse 23, some went out, there you go, got it. Some went out on the sea in ships. The phrase is, some went down on the sea in ships. Do we have down imagery in Jonah? You bet we do. Chapter 1, verse 3 echoes. And he went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish, and he went down into the ship. Some went out to sea in ships. They were merchants on the mighty waters. Who were the people in the ship in Jonah? Carrying cargo, right? They're merchants, yeah. Verse 24, they saw the works of Yahweh, his wonderful deeds in the deep. For he spoke and stirred up a stormy wind. Stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. Does that happen in Jonah? Chapter 1, verse 4, and Yahweh hurled a mighty wind, a great wind onto the sea, and it became a great storm. Yes, he did. Verse 26, they mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths. Does anybody in the story of Jonah go down to the depths? You better believe it. Jonah 2, verse 5. They went down to the depths. In their peril, their courage melted away. They reeled and staggered like drunkards. They were at their wits' end, or maybe a little bit more literal translation is their wisdom was swallowed up. Swallowed up. Was anything swallowed up in the Jonah story? Same phrase, same Hebrew phrase used there. 1 verse 7. Then they cried out to Yahweh in their trouble, and He brought them out of their distress. This one is echoed 3 times in Jonah's story. 1 verse 5, the sailors are crying out each to their own God. Does that work? No. 1 verse 14, and then they cried out to Yahweh. Does that one work? Yep. And then in chapter 2, verse 2, when Jonah is in the belly of the great fish, he says, and I called out to Yahweh in my distress. It's funny. The story of Jonah mirrors Psalm 107, and in it, Jonah quotes Psalm 107. All right, that's verse 28. Verse 29, he stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. Jonah 1:15, stopped the storm. Verse 30, they were glad when it grew calm, and he guided them to their desired haven. They were quieted. Again, same phrase as 1 verse 11 and 12 in Jonah. Verse 31, let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love and His wondrous deeds for mankind. Jonah 1, verse 16, and they offered sacrifices to Yahweh, and they fulfilled their vows. 2, verse 9, Jonah, and I will with a voice of thanks, I will sacrifice to you, make vows. Which one came first, the chicken or the egg? I don't know, but both were involved in the process, weren't they? Or something was involved in the process of both of them. The way that the exact phrases from the lines in the psalm are all over the story of Jonah. But look at the story. What's the story about in Psalm 107? These people are following their own foolish desires. God sends a storm to straighten them out. They cry out to Yahweh in distress. He makes the storm go away and forgives them. What's the elevator sales pitch of Jonah? Same thing, right? I want you to do something. You're going after your own selfish desires. God sends a storm. He cries out to Yahweh in his distress. God forgives him. Same thing happens to Nineveh in the next section, all right? 40 more days and disaster is going to come. They cry out to Yahweh in their distress. And what happens? He forgives them. And this is what Jonah's so bent out of shape about. I knew you were going to do this. Why? Well, because there's a psalm that tells us 4 times God does this. There's a story of Moses that tells us God does this. It's a repeated, it's that cycle of time thing.
His selfishness was, he didn't want God to forgive.
Yeah.
The way he felt about
it. Yeah. He didn't want him forgiven. Not at all. Which, there's a little bit of that Jesus statement, remove the plank out of your own eye before you try to remove the splinter out of your brother's eye. Yeah, Jonah is blinded by his own plank, by his own forest in his eye. Let's put it that way. He's got quite a few flaws. But if we're honest, we do too, don't we? Yeah. Both Jonah and the sailors are set on this analogy of Psalm 107, or at least this part of it. And again, this is something that the Bible does a lot. It is its own commentary on itself. You get these phrases, you get these quotes, You get these outright references to stuff. Again, Jonah flat out quotes Exodus 34 at the end of his rant with God. What are we supposed to do with that? Just take it on face value, or do we look at the whole story and what happened? You find a whole lot more when you compare that whole story to what's happening. So, questions about Psalm 107 or Jonah chapter 1? Yeah, we do get in that situation. Jonah wants to control God, doesn't he?
Right.
Yeah. I don't want God to forgive, so therefore if I don't go, God won't forgive him.
Who am I to judge?
Yeah. It's a very similar kind of retelling of this same story, and it hits you. There is a there's this theme throughout Scripture of people wanting God to act a certain way, and we do the same thing, right? You know, when you say a prayer, you're wanting God to act a certain way, right? You're asking Him for something. And the question is, are we asking for God to do something that is in character with what God does? A lot of times we don't understand the character of God. Now, Jonah is just the opposite. He understands the character of God, and he doesn't like the character of God. He doesn't like the fact that God forgives. He doesn't want God to act according to His character. But as you were speaking about that, as you were kind of relating that to you, what came into my mind was the disciples that Jesus is, you know, Jesus, they're following Jesus around. They're seeing Jesus do all this stuff. Hey, we saw somebody casting out demons in your name, and he's not one of us. You want us to call down fire from heaven and just smite the guy? You know, the Samaritans, they don't want you here. If you want us to call fire down from, you want us just, let's just kill them all. You know, they kind of got that attitude, don't they? What's the attitude of Jonah? And if I'm real honest, what's the attitude of my heart sometimes to people I don't like? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if you didn't hear online, Jared was mentioning this movie and this idea of bad theology, that we get this idea of Jesus, get me out of here so I don't have to deal with this evil world anymore. We always think that Jesus has saved us from something. We don't ever think that Jesus has saved us for something. He has a reason for us to be here. He has a mission for us to be here. Genesis 1 teaches you anything. Human beings were created for a purpose. And the purpose was not to leave. The purpose was to be here to maintain God's rule over things, to be His image bearers in the world. And when Christ saves us, when He makes us a new creation, when He makes us a new person, and we become more and more in the image of God, in the likeness of God, again, all kinds of Genesis language there, what are we supposed to do? Fly away, right? Well, maybe one day, but we have a job to do now. We forget about that. Jonah has a job to do now. And what does he want to do? His name is Dove. He wants to fly away. He's not supposed to fly away. He's supposed to do the mission that God has sent him on. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you, it echoes everywhere. It's just, anyway.
Somebody else. It's always for somebody else, and when it is, it gives you everything that you need on the inside. It's like counteracts, you know. If I can do this, if I go through this for them, thinking that I'm doing it for me in my mind, but actually I'm doing it for somebody else, then it comes back to me tenfold.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one of the most amazing things about God in my mind is that how he takes what we royally mess up and uses it for his glory. And I was having a Bible study with somebody recently, and they just kept coming back to the fact of, but I've messed up too much. Like, God can't use that. And I'm going, you're right. God has used every other screw-up on the face of the earth, but you're special. He can't use your screw-up. And the person kind of got this look on their face like, what? I said, did Abraham mess up? Did God use it? Yeah. Did Sarah mess up? Did God use it? Did David mess up? Did God use it? We can stand here all day long. He's only worked with mess-ups until he sent himself in human form that didn't mess up. You know, so the idea that God can't use it, no, it's just not there. It's just not there.
It's like when I was a kid growing up until I was 15, I was listening. And I went to treatment and I gave it to God and everything over the years. Well, I never saw where maybe he was going to use that in my life. And one time when I was in prison, they were doing a speak out and I was involved in it, but it was for drugs and alcohol. But why didn't words that come out of my mouth say, if any of you in here has ever been molested? And one little girl, I mean, it was kids that came in to the speak out, and went to her counselor and said, I've been molested. That changed one person's life, and it was worth it all, you know? I mean,
yeah.
God used it for his glory.
Amen.
But, I mean, it took years for me to realize, what are you going to use that for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for being a willing vessel to use your past hurts. I'll use the phrase hurts, habits, and hang-ups to be able to provide healing for others. I think one of the greatest tragedies is that we bottle those things up inside. And we're like Jonah. We try to control how God's not going to use them. You know?
And we need to release it to God so he can free us.
And just to mirror us back to Jonah, when Jonah starts releasing his control over things, some of that is forced a little bit, but when he starts releasing his control and his idea of things, what happens?
Yeah.
So, you had something? I saw like 4 or 5 hands, so I will. Yes, ma'am.
Going back to the idea of down, down. In our earthly, beastly nature is to go down, 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 as opposed to being raised up or lifted up and walking in authority. And I thought about the serpent, of course, what was serpent's punishment? Down on his belly. And there's a saying that, you know, a lot of testimonies keep going down, down, down until there's nowhere to go.
We call it rock bottom.
Rock bottom, nowhere to go.
As far down as you can go. Yeah.
But that word, when you said Psalm 107:23, those who mm-hmm. go down to the sea mm-hmm. in ships, the Hebrew word is yarad, and that's where we get our English word yard. Because if we walk out of our house, you step down to go to your yard. The Jordan River, you know, there's songs like, let's go
down to the river to pray.
Yep. But Jordan in Hebrew is Yardan, the Yardan, but it's going down.
Mm-hmm.
But we can connect that to baptism. Jonah and what he went through was a type of baptism, putting his old man down, down, down to death,
mm-hmm.
and then rising up in new life.
Yeah, and we talked about that a couple weeks ago when I said I would work on my art. Remember I hastily drew that awful drawing on the marker board because we couldn't find markers, and I forgot to put the board out here. And I've forgotten to redraw that, but I'm going to redraw it because it's going to play an important part in chapter 2, what's going on there. But yeah, I'll get into this.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, ma'am. Ask the question.
Did I miss it? Tell me what I was supposed to get out of stepping down into the yard. What does the yard represent? Where were you going with that? I missed it.
It is a stepping down. And it's the word for yard is taken from the Hebrew word that means down.
Okay. So
just means down.
Going
down, well, okay, so this kind of ties into that, and that awful drawing that I had that I need to redo, there is a cosmology of things. How is the world built? And when you read the Bible, when you look at things, if you just start drawing things on paper, you're going to find out that God's dwelling is where? Up or down?
Up.
And if I want to go up to the holy mountain of Jerusalem, is this a good thing or a bad thing? And if I go down to the depths, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Yes,
throughout the song, well, yeah, okay, yes.
If you're walking in pride and arrogance and looking down your nose and saying, yeah, send them all to the bad place, they're awful.
You will be brought
down.
And how many times? It's not the end of the story. Yeah. And how many... Again, think about the Psalms. How many times does David say, from the depths you rescued me? Again, David's temple, David's palace was not in a floodplain. That's not what this is about. But the idea is, this goes back to Genesis chapter 1. God separated the waters above from the what?
Waters
below. The idea is that we are all on land that God brought up. The foundations of the earth hold that land up. What's underneath the land? Water and oil. We're in West Texas, let's be honest. But there's water down there, right? And so what the ancients believed is that when you went down and you kept going down, you would eventually wind up in the water. And so you get all this imagery of watery graves when people are down in the depths. In the depths, I cried out to you, Lord. You're basically saying, I was good as dead. But God brought me back. What does our baptism represent? We go into the water, and what does it represent? Our death. Why does it represent our death? This is the view of the Bible authors. Again, we have telescopes. We look at the world a little bit differently. That doesn't mean that they were wrong in their symbolism and in their imagery. The idea of I'm going down into the waters. What's so amazing about the fact that God separates the sea? He's God there too. Even where the dead people live. He's God there too. That is a whole thing. But spend some time in the Psalms and just start thumbing through all the places where God rescues people from the water. It's this idea of death. You know, David always talks about, it was up to my neck. You know, I was drowning. You're being sucked into death, and God's rescuing you from that. So, yeah. Yes, sir.
As a rule, wouldn't you say, though, that the deeper you go, the better you grow?
Not in the water.
There's more life in the oceans than there is on the land.
There is. So 1:17 is where we're going to pick up next week, and it's about what lives in that water.
Hardly anything grows on that.
I'll give you a Greek word to look up this week. No, Hebrew word, tannin. Look up the Hebrew word tannin.
Like Jonah
1:17 is where we're going to start. And there's a Hebrew thing and there's a Greek thing in Jonah 1:17 that changes the way we view this. But that goes to that. Is there stuff in the ocean? Yes, there is. Is there a lot of life there? Depends on how you look at it. Yes, there is. But part of that's going to play into this next story, that God appoints something from that realm.
A rabbit trail from a point.
Oh, you're fine. We rabbit trail all the time around here.
The idea was that us being down in the depths is what makes us grow.
Uh-huh. It does.
There's no reason to try to get higher when you're on top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I got to bring my map back. I got to bring my drawing back. We'll have the drawing back next week. We're going to look at 1:17. Because you're looking at it from a very wise standpoint. And you're looking at it from the way that we view things.
If we learn something.
I want to look at it the way that they look at it too. And see what I can learn from that. And there are realms that are dedicated for certain purposes. And we'll talk about that next week. So, in the meantime, read Jonah again. It doesn't take very long. Go read through it, and these sort of things will start echoing around. And you'll probably hear some stuff we've talked about in chapter 1 come back around a little bit later in Jonah. And we'll have that discussion next week. See you guys later.
Okay. Honey.
The word.
sea creatures is there. That's how they translate it.